to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the week.
Well, North Bay's Action Jacks. Somehow, she's AV. Angelica Vlasenko on the board. Eddie Weber out of town for 3 days. He's becoming a traveling man. Willie Loman. You know who that is, AV?
No, I would like to know.
Willie Loman was a book by, or play by, yeah, I should know the name, Death of a Salesman. And he was on the road, he was a traveling man on the road all the time. Now people have to do it anymore with all the technology we have, fortunately. S&P futures up 750, NASDAQ futures up 2875, Dow futures up 74. We're pushing up towards a record. We have not a whole lot of bad news. Some of the earnings are, even though they keep being downplayed, and it's pretty interesting when you look at the numbers and not the hype. Okay, you can always look at the BS and have people blow it by you. That's easy for people to do. But if you look at where the markets are, and not this year, okay, because we had a huge down quarter last year. If you look at where the markets are. From you know what, I'm going to do the exact numbers. Let me know when we get Lou. If you look at the S&Ps, we are today. The spider is 302.36, and December 31st of last year we were. Actually, the S&Ps has had a pretty good move the last week, but we reached the top of 280 last December, before we started going down. So if you go all the way back, if I go from, I got to go to 2 years here. We will go to 2 years, and we will go that way. If you do that, we're basically up from January of 2 years ago. We were at 275, so we're up roughly 3%, maybe. So 3 or 4% in a 2 year span, and the earnings are up like 2%. So from last year, maybe 2.5%. So if you look at things from a little longer perspective and not from the beginning of the year, it's actually somewhat, there's some logic to it, which, you know, hopefully there are times when the market has logic. That's supposed to be the whole idea. You would think that would happen, and we're sort of there. Now the question is, how much higher can we go? I mean, these earnings are really not much better than they were a year ago. They're up some, and they were supposed to be worse, and they're not. So whenever you have a quarter, when that's the case, generally that quarter you want to be long, even though it's hard to, when you think the earnings are not going to be so good, you know, because it's hard to look at the relative value. I mean, it's the idea, you know, this company, do I like it? Yeah, maybe not so much, but compared to another company, it's cheap. Well, sometimes if the market's moving up, that makes it a good buy. If the market's all of a sudden going to turn down, it's still not such a good buy. So the market is always very tricky. I mean, you really don't know here what the future holds. If you look at just the market, it actually looks fairly strong. I mean, it's up every day. The Fed's pouring money in. But then when you look at the overall view, and if you take a longer term view, you say, well, all we're doing is pouring more money into the system and borrowing more dough. Be it individually, be it countrywide, be it central banks. I mean, there's like three groups of people borrowing. And you sit there and you say, I mean, it's at some level, you don't, the idea that a consumer is borrowing money to buy a car, some days it means the consumer is confident, some days it means he's an idiot. The question is, which day are we talking about? Right now, we're in the consumer is confident mode, and we all hope that that's the way that works out. Yeah, we also know that there have been times when it hasn't quite worked out that way. So, you know, you never really know where you are. It just is somewhat troubling that every year, for the next few, it looks like we're talking about $1 trillion more in debt. And then these are big numbers. So when you say, okay, if the government wasn't doing that, especially since it's not being borrowed from us, the Fed's coming up with essentially 3/4 of it. So now that, you know, that's a problem. So, hey, V, do you get all that? You understand what I'm talking about? Not really.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow.
I'm sorry, did you get all that?
I'm working on my weather report.
Oh, God.
For our listener.
So, no Lou yet? He's supposed to be calling in from Italy.
No, he's not calling yet.
Well, maybe we should...
We're waiting for him.
Maybe we should text him. You got his text over there?
I'll look for
it. If you don't, I will do that.
No, I didn't see it.
I will text him. So yeah, we've got that going for us. What about those Bears? I mean, I can't begin to even think of what happened with that game yesterday. I mean, I look at what happened, and when they're wandering down the field, and they all of a sudden start playing for this 40-yard field goal in the rain and the grass, I'm just going, please don't do this. I'm like, don't do this. This is something. This is dangerous. 40-yard field goal is not a layup. And the guy missed it by like a little bit. At least he didn't hit the light pole like the guy last year. But still, it was why they couldn't have got a little closer. I have no idea, and they didn't. And I'm sitting there going, please don't do this to this poor kid. and they did. I don't know. It's when he of course swings it a little bit left because he was a little bit right the first time. It's windy. I don't know why they couldn't have gone another 10 yards or at least tried to. This idea that, and they didn't even do it with 10 seconds left, for if it was a bad snap, they couldn't have done it over again. It's not 100% possibility. It's not even 90. I mean, the guy was 2 for 3. It's, why if you could get closer? I mean, to me, the coaching is horrendous. You set this poor guy up to fail. Not to mention that a professional kicker, I mean, a 40-yarder, I'm sure he would say he should have made it. I mean, everybody would say he should have made it, but just, God bless. Why do that? Then there were the Irish, which were, that was somewhat interesting. And they absolutely laid an egg out in Michigan. Anybody watched that game? And, I can't believe how bad they are. I mean, absolutely can't believe how bad they are. And congratulations to Michigan. I'm sure we'll be listening to Joel tomorrow. But, it would be, I don't know that Michigan's any good. The only game I can possibly say that was that bad that I ever watched before was the Orange Bowl game against Nebraska in like 1972, where the Irish had no business being in the Orange Bowl. They had a very marginal team. Joe Theismann had not retired. He had graduated the year before. Cliff Brown was the quarterback. And he could have been the only quarterback. The other name I've ever had was worse than this guy. So they go down to Miami, and we all drive down there like a bunch of idiots. I think we had 7 of us in the car. You know, my dad's old Oldsmobile. And you could actually put that many people in those old cars. Can you imagine that, AV, having a car big enough where you put 7 people in there for a long drive? But they were big old buses. So we drive all.
I imagine that.
Yeah, the cars. Have you ever seen the old cars driving along? You say, I can't believe they ever had cars that big. Those things were huge. And anyway, so we drive down and we go to the game, and Johnny Rogers was playing, who was one of the most spectacular players to this day I've ever seen. I don't know what happened to him. I mean, he went to Canada and I think he had some drug issues or whatever. Never was seen or heard from again. But in college, I don't know if there was anybody all that much more dynamic. Maybe Tony Dorsett or a couple of guys, but not very many. I mean, he was a punt returner. He was a kickoff returner. He did everything. All you could see, we had these crummy seats at like the second row of the end zone. It was a horrible stadium, the old Orange Bowl. So you couldn't really see much. All you could see was his number, like coming at you and running away from you. You knew he was gaining both ways. And then we left, and it took forever to get out of the parking lot. So all these Nebraska people and the Winnebagoes from like the first ones ever made, the big square jobs that had driven all the way down there for the game, all they did was give us no end of grief. And obviously it was well deserved. We got in the car and drove all the way home from the game. What do you think? We got in the car in a parking lot in Miami and drove all the way home, 20-some hours or whatever it was, without, only stopping for gas. The game was so bad. We had no place to stay that night, so off we went. Isn't it nice to be young? How is it nice to be young? You do all those kinds of things, like drive to L.A. just because?
I wish, but I don't feel like young and free. I feel a lot of responsibility right now on myself.
Well,
it's, a tough life.
Well, you only get that a little bit, like when you're in college.
Looks like Lou is calling.
Oh, okay, that might be Lou or it might be Jan.
Good morning.
I want you to see who that is. The And then we'll put whoever it is on. SP Futures up 8.25 now.
Sure, yeah.
NASDAQ Futures up 31. The, we'll see if it is Lou, because Lou and John have two different things to talk about, depending on who they are.
All right, we have Kevin.
Hey, good morning.
Kevin, hey, what's up, man? We had John.
Hey, it sounded like you needed some help while you were tracking down Lou.
I did, and then John's calling in a little bit, John Flanagan. But I was, I wanted to talk about some of the games, and I was kind of hoping maybe you would call in. What about the Irish? What about the Bears? What the hell, Kevin? What about the Nationals?
Hey, man, it's basketball season. I'm going to my first basketball game tomorrow night.
Wow. I thought they started on the 31st.
They have exhibitions first.
Oh, I thought it was like, didn't they just do?
No, their opener actually is in a couple of weeks. The Notre Dame's opening game is at North Carolina.
Wow. When's the Midnight Madness?
How's that for fun, huh?
Really, when's the Midnight Madness, where people do something at midnight just to have a
score? Oh, that's way past it. Nobody, not everybody does Midnight Madness anymore.
All right, I'm showing my age with that again?
Well, no, it's just kind of a silly event.
Well, yeah, a lot of events are silly. The Michigan game was silly. God.
Yeah, that was silly, too. So, yes, the football season ended this weekend.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
I don't, I thought.
And it's the same hell if you're a Notre Dame fan like you and I are. It's the same hell because we have coaches who think it's better to trick the opponent than to beat the opponent.
Yeah, I don't get that. I had, the guy who was on, you and I have both been kind of beaten up on this offense where the running game starts from the quarterback in the shotgun, and it's pouring rain up there. And was it Tim Brown or somebody? It was a couple weeks ago. They interviewed him before the game. Heisman winner Tim Brown had a big pro career, and he said, "I don't understand the way they do the running game now." He goes, "My watch of the film is, well, to back up a little bit, I think Kevin being in a shotgun gives the quarterback." Just a millisecond faster. They used to do tests back in the day where they have back in the day. They had Johnny Unitas, who allegedly to this day is still, they claim, the fastest guy to get from the center back into the five step drop. He was that quick with his five steps, and of course he had long legs. But they timed him getting the ball from center and backing up versus a guy in a shotgun catching the ball, firming up his grip on the laces, and being able to look downfield. And the shotgun is a little faster. I mean, a minuscule faster. But Tim Brown says if you hand the ball off to a guy back there, he's almost a full second slower getting to the line than if the quarterback's under center. So what you gain in the pass...
Yeah, so your guys have to hold their blocks.
Yeah.
Longer.
Well, and if you listen to...
And because they use so much motion, you know, you used to have the advantage on the offensive line. You knew the count and the defense did. Well, now, because they have so much motion in there, they don't go on counts very often anymore.
No.
You've given up that advantage as well.
Well, and Tom Thayer always talks about in a really well-run offense, running... You know, running game. He says your linemen are supposed to hit their first guy. The back is supposed to be right there, and they're supposed to be able to get out in front of him to the second level, and the back still gets by the first guy. So the lineman not only has his first block responsibility, he has the second level responsibility. I don't see that possibly happening whatsoever, getting a handoff deep in the backfield. Unless the guy's Eric Dickerson and he's coming up while you're coming back from center. It's just the whole timing.
Well,
fossils
like you and I and Tom Thayer don't get the genius of the current offensive designs.
No. And I'd be very frustrating to be a lineman, I think. Because I mean, a second is a day when you're trying to block on the offensive line. Right?
Yes, it is. And you know, if you hit quick enough, all you have to do is get inside on your assignment. If can just get into his body, you're in the way now.
Yeah, you don't even know.
I don't know. I don't understand it. Roll. How's that? Let's talk about anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, when I was trying to give our guys kudos, Kevin. Boy, what about a shift from football to politics? But just when I was ready, want to give our guys a shift from. I didn't really know the name of this dude there, the guy that got killed, the Special Forces. I mean, I was not as familiar with that name. Obviously, that was Osama bin Laden. But let's say, for instance, our guys did a hell of a good job, whatever it is they were supposed to do. So I was pretty much in a congratulatory mode. So last night, I go online, find out what a market is, see what's going on for the show. And sure enough, I come across an article about Trump's latest iteration, that after he pulled the troops out of northern Syria, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said this week that the U.S. will send in troops to protect Syrian oil fields from Islamic State militants. What? There's a Syrian government we can't get out of. The Russians now pretty much own the northern half of the place. And all of a sudden, but the quote is, he's trying to make a deal with ExxonMobil to tap the Syrian oil reserves. And his comment is, we should be able to take some of that oil. Kevin, what are we talking about? I mean, is this just another thing to get the Democrats pissed off, or are we serious that all of a sudden Syrian oil becomes ours, even though we're pulling out of one area, but now we're gonna zero in on the oil fields, and we're gonna send troops for the oil?
Well, if I've learned anything about this president, Tom, it's that if it comes into his head, it comes out of his mouth. So
yeah.
I tend to wait and see what happens more so than what he says, because if you dote on everything he says, you'll go nuts.
But what if you were the Secretary of Defense?
And actually, I know people who do that. You know,
yeah, it's
every pronouncement is an outrage, and they may be, but you know, I just can't get too worked up over it anymore. I'll go with what he does versus what he says, because he doesn't do everything he says.
Well, I'm agreeing with you on that. The only thing I'm concerned about is that, and you as a management guy, you can't actually be expecting this Secretary of Defense to prepare for this. I mean, that's a different story. Then it's not just an outpeep. But if you actually got this guy with people working on it, I mean, ugh. It's one thing if he just said it and the defense secretary just said what you just said. Well, I'll believe it when I see the order hit my desk. Then I'm okay with it. Be honest with you. But what if I hope we're not like preparing for it. That would not be good.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, that's one where we will wait and see. Let's see what they do.
Because I've had
plenty of bosses like him where they have to ask at least twice or three times before I'm going to bother with them, because I don't know what they really want or what the whim of the day was.
Can you think of a country? There's got to have been some, because I'm asking you. Lou would probably know, but can you think of a country in our lifetime that is this Syria just open for everybody in the world walking through there except Syrians? What? Does the guy who runs the place, does he actually think he runs the place? The king?
Nice place, huh?
I mean, what? I'm going to have to go on the map today and find out just how big this thing is. I mean, what is this?
It's probably about the size of, I don't know, I would guess it's probably Ohio maybe at the most.
Yeah, I would think so too. But, and there's how many different people running around in there thinking they're in charge? So there's Assad, and he hangs in Damascus, right? And then around there.
Yeah.
And then you got the Kurds up north.
You got a Kurdish encampment, you got ISIS is alternately depending on what stage of development or distress it's in is going to be there, and I am sure that you have Iran involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can salute the idea of getting out of there. I really can.
Well, and then you end up leaving it when you break all these places. It doesn't stay there. That's the problem. And what situation? You know, you don't hear anymore. What situation is Iraq in? It's very hard to get on the front page in a newspaper right now. I mean, I think about it. She's one of my favorite comedians and actresses, Tina Fey. is that movie she was in with the, I keep forgetting the name, but Maddie always remembers, where she's the journalist over in Afghanistan. And because the people here got so tired of us being over there that it's, you can't even, that she had to go to wilder and wilder things to get on like page 3 or page 2. And, you know, there had to be like, you know, 1,000 people killed to get on page 1 type of thing. So she kept going to more and more dangerous places so her story would get on, you know, further up in the newspaper. But does anybody even think about all these other places anymore? I haven't seen Ukraine in a paper in ages. I mean, any place in South America, Venezuela, what's going on down there? I mean,
other than this, all this stuff with Trump, the phone call, corruption, Biden, and all of that, has gotten Ukraine back on it, but not, you know, not its battles with Russia.
No, and haven't heard about.
Although that's part of the whole picture.
We don't even have to do, Kevin. I once in a while, I get a solicitation, not that kind of solicitation, you pervert. No, where I get one from the Economist magazine. I'm gonna have to re-up for that one. That's the only one around where it's good. It's good to read this and go to sleep kind of stuff. But at least they have in there. There's a summary of what's going on in like every continent and every country. So you can actually sit there and read the thing and, oh, this is what's going on in Venezuela now because they can't make it to the front page. But obviously they still got issues down there, right? But they must have. There's still no money. There's still no currency.
Of course they do. Including total economic collapse. So,
yeah. How do you even keep track of which one should be on the front page? You know, just crazy to me. But,
imagine you're responsible for your foreign policy in the United States.
Oh, I think it would be. I think though you have
how many dimensions? How many dimensions is that chessboard?
Yeah, really. Well, that's one I think you really need to have, and I hope we do, Kevin. I don't know if we do or not. That's why I'm always a little bit concerned about our system of government. Not whether we're this or that. Is that our story is when somebody becomes a president. How many people resign? It's like 1,500 or something. It's an incredible amount of people when you have like a change in party or a change.
Yeah, a lot of turnover. So a lot of where I think you're leading is the lack of institutional knowledge.
Yeah, and I would hope that you would sit there. I mean, God, if it was me, the first thing I'd say is, hey, the guys that are the Undersecretary of State for South America or Brazil, I'd immediately try and get somebody people to say who's good over there and who isn't. Hey, this guy Kevin O'Neill's been there for 20 years. He knows the area backwards and forwards. He speaks 3 languages. Tell Kevin, I don't want him to leave it, is the first thing I'd say, right? I mean, I don't know how you do that to 1,500 people, or if 1,200 or whatever it is. I mean, if you just let them all go and say, I'll find guys better, that would be. We're British. Those guys, they change governments all the time, but all the other people are essentially career diplomats. But now that, you know, if it's a career guy for 100 years, well, that probably fraught with some peril too, but at least when you change.
Yeah, try and do Brexit with that.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you about that because I had a conversation with Eric last night. We went up and watched some of the Packer game in the World Series. World Series was kind of a clunk, but the Packer game was halfway decent. It's interesting when you listen to the people that they interview over in Britain. It's really a vote that half the people don't want to abide by. I mean, it's almost. I mean, everybody accuses everybody here of the election. Nobody wants to abide by. I don't know if I believe that, but they're over there. It really is. I mean, they interview people. They had some lady on. Just we need another vote. We don't want Brexit. I mean, there's no deal that we want. We don't want to leave. You know, the people in London don't want to leave. I mean, they think whether they're all working for the financial industry or what it is. It's a vote that the people.
Yeah. So what it really gets down to, Tom, is the difference between majority and consensus.
Well, yeah, I guess.
You know, majority being I have 50% plus one, or I have one more vote than the other side, however it's divided. Whereas consensus that takes time to build, but consensus is where you have a really really big majority, and a whole bunch of other people that may not agree, but they can live with it, and that. Takes a long time to build, and that's kind of the unfortunate issue when you have, you know, a short-term view on politics. But you have to have a short-term view because there's always the next election. And, I think that's a real challenge now because we don't have consensus. Well, I think we have more consensus than most people imagine on some issues, but in general, on some big things, we don't have any consensus at all, and yet we have people who want to encode it into law in this country. How's that?
Well, I would agree with that.
For a wrap-up comment before you go to break and to John, and
well, John,
I go ahead inside and have a blood draw here.
Really? Well, yeah, we'll do that. John, I don't think John's on for a little bit, so you can stay as long as you want. I think he's on at...
I just pulled up to where
right,
I go.
Well, fair enough,
I have a doctor's appointment next week, so I'm getting my regular physical, but I'm getting the blood work done.
And now in your tip-top
shape. I'm going to do that, and while I'm in the waiting room, I'll listen to you and John.
Make sure she only sticks you once, not like five times, looking for, you know, vein.
Yeah, just, you know, I do it with conviction. That's all I ever tell them.
All right, bud. SP Futures up 9.
Right.
SP Futures up 30. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Long up at Stocks and Jocks. Time to announce she's AV on the board. S&P futures up 850. NASDAQ futures up 2675. We're bullish pretty much all morning. We're up last night. Dow futures up 96 now. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 57 points, 0.4%. FTSE down 5, call that flat. CAC around up 7, call that flat. So we got the DAX up and the rest of them kind of hacking around. Nikkei up 67 points, 0.3%. Shanghai up 25.8. Hang Seng up 223.8. Speaking of things off the headlines, the U.S.-China thing is, you know, it's a little bit of optimism. On Friday, if somebody's talking to somebody, but it's kind of a little bit off the front page, too, as well. There's not a whole lot on the front page. 10-year yield, though, this is interesting, 1.83. We're easing back up here. We're way up from the 1.48 bottom. The Bund, minus 0.35. Japan, minus 0.12. So as the Fed is looking to lower short-term rates, these long-term rates are definitely creeping up. And not sure why that is, but they definitely are rising. So just so you know, everybody's convinced the Fed controls interest rates. They control the short-term rates. They don't necessarily control the long-term rates. As soon as they think they do, that's when they get in trouble. Oil down 34 cents, 54.32. Brent down 36 cents, 61.66. Natural gas up 5 cents, 235. Maybe that 223 low might actually hold. We'll see. Gold up 220, 15.07. Silver up 14 cents, back up over 18 bucks, 18.07. Copper still not going anywhere, 2.68. It's up from where it was at 260, but it's not exactly bullish. When you get over $3, that's when people think that the Chinese economy starts picking up a little bit. AV, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? AV, are you there?
Good morning. It's 36 past the hour, currently 46 degrees in Chicago. We're expecting a mix of clouds and sun this morning, followed by mostly cloudy skies and a few showers this afternoon. 90% a chance of steady rain overnight.
We need the rain. It only rained like about 8 inches the other day, but
more rain.
Yeah.
The highest of the day will be 49 and the lowest 39. In Phoenix is, as always, sunny, clear skies, currently 62 degrees. The highest of the day will be 74 and the lowest 47. Isn't it nice?
Yeah. And nicer than here.
Yes. In traffic, we have one serious crash reported on Stevenson going north before Dan Ryan Expressway, which causing a solid traffic. They promise a delay up to 2 hours. I don't want to believe that.
Yeah, that's a good, I'd turn back if I were you.
In general, the traffic scene looks pretty clear right now. Just some constructions here and there, and 90 expressway going west to 90 as well, 90, 94. So let's see how the traffic scene will change in 1 hour. In sports, we have Bears lost to Chargers 16-17, and Cardinals lost to Saints 9-31.
Yeah, they got clobbered. Yeah, the Saints are pretty good.
Did you watch the game?
I watched the Bears. Yeah, it was when you watch it by yourself. First of all, it's impossible to watch because there's so many commercials. So I taped it and then I come back every 15 minutes and go through the commercials as I'm working on the stuff for the show as well. Actually, going over the economic calendar, which we're going to talk about now. But yeah, I watched some of it. And I was just appalled at the end by not helping that kicker by getting a little closer. I mean, why? As windy as it was off the grass, a 40-yard kick is not a layup. They could have got him another 10 yards, and then it might have been a layup, and the guy missed by a little bit. If you look at the kick, if they'd have been 5 yards closer, it would have been good. I don't know. Anyway.
I think we have a Kevin.
We have Kevin. Kevin, we got you back.
It's John.
John, I'm sorry.
Oh, she's accusing you of being Kevin.
I just missed him. I heard.
I thought we have.
Anyway, Kevin just called in because we don't know what happened to Lou. We don't know if he's incarcerated over in in Italy or wherever he's at. But I haven't heard any tweet to come bail me out. I got to get my Euro dollars and bail him out wherever he is. But
well, let's hope he's well.
Yeah, let's hope he's well. But so how are you? I just mentioned AV on the way in. She goes, "How was your weekend?" I said, "Well, I watched the Irish. I watched the Bears. It was an hour and a half in a driving rainstorm getting to Orland Friday night so I could be there in time, or Saturday night in time to watch the Irish. And then I'm not a big fan of Houston, so I'm hoping for the Nationals, and they lose three in a row. So it's not exactly been a sports weekend from the gods for this guy."
Yeah, it's a tough weekend. I looked at my little rain gauge yesterday out in the backyard at 3.1 inches, which I think is an all-time record. I've lived here for one rain event, so that kind of expressed the whole weekend for me.
Oh, man, it rained from what? From really 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock on Saturday till 2 in the morning. I mean, pretty much.
Oh, it's constant, like buckets on the wall or something. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. So it was good day to stay in and not watch TV either.
Weather changing, global warming, whatever it is. God. We're going to have to get our friend Mr. Conway on one of these days and talk about the real stuff that's happening.
Really?
because of course he's apolitical about it. And for those that don't know, Tom Conway was my roommate, two to 4 years at Notre Dame, and he went on to get, his master's at the Ohio State and his PhD from Rhode Island, and then And he went on to work for NOAA for really his whole career, and he was one of the guys that was in the DC-8 flights over the Arctic when we worried about ozone holes. By the way, do we still have those, or we just don't talk about them anymore?
Yeah, it's another one of those stories that got swept off the headlines, like you were just talking about, around the break. The China deal, all this stuff is kind of like when page 28. I can't find anything in the paper today about it. So these things vanish.
I have to get back because Kath, when she was helping us out with the show, and she still does a little bit. She would always. She was a rabid subscriber to the London Times and those kinds of things, and you'd have to go there to get any story. You know what I used to use a lot, John, and before they closed up was Al Jazeera US.
I did too. I actually respected their online news quite a bit because it was varied, and I thought their writing, when I read it, was awfully good compared to what you would see on one of the a CBS or NBC online news outlet, which I thought was very, very cut down, shortened, no real information, no in-depth reporting apparent. I'm sure they had some reporting, but you wouldn't know it from the way these articles got treated online.
Well, if you watch the Al Jazeera, Middle East, it's obviously pretty slanted. But the one here, I didn't think it was all that slanted. I thought those articles were pretty informative.
I did too. I miss that kind of global coverage, or at least the potential for global coverage, because the news has gotten very parochial. What you're forced to read in the newspapers, for example. And very superficial and very repetitive. So, I miss that kind of thing I used to watch when I was reading Al Jazeera more regularly.
Well, somewhere along the line, and, this isn't really a left-right question, my mom was very forward-thinking in a lot of ways. When the Vietnam War era came, before that, John, the nightly news was 15 minutes, right? And the movie started at 10:15.
Yep.
You had four stations, and the movies all started. Well, there was always the Tonight Show was always on 5, right? And you had something on 7, but 2 and 9 were movies, right?
Right.
So the movie started at 10:15, and you could essentially watch the movie and be done by 11:45, and go to bed. It's still a reasonable hour, but of course, then when Vietnam came, the news came went to be a half hour. All right, I'm saying, this war is going to be over one of these days. I wonder if they're ever going to go back to the 15-minute news. I think the answer was no. But I guess my question is, when you look at CNBC, you look at CNN, when you look at Fox, obviously, when you're talking about 24 hours, quote, news, well, first of all, I'm sorry, whatever side of the aisle you're on, there is no such thing as 24-hour, quote, news. There could be a 24-hour station that is ready for breaking news. You can have a 24-hour news radio thing that, because you're given traffic and weather and all the stuff that's going on in the world every hour, you can keep that up for 24-hour. But basically, there's not a whole lot of, quote, news that's spitting out that anybody wants to listen to. I mean, you could do financial news if you're doing earnings and everything, but that would bore somebody to tears, right?
Right. Well, yeah, you couldn't have a steady diet of that, but certainly it could be a model for what's missing in other areas of coverage. I notice even on radio, you know, AM radio, I listen, you know, to traffic, weather, stuff like that on WBBM and other stations like that, but I hear the same news story sometimes 2 and 3 days apart, completely regurgitated.
Well, they don't,
you know, little feel-good features or foreign correspondent stuff or whatever, and it's like you've never heard it before, but sometimes I've heard it 2 or 3 times before, and you would think with so much going on, you wouldn't need to do that ever. There would always be an opportunity for something you've never heard before,
that
and
would
maybe
take
twice as much, you know, airtime as it's ever given, at least. But even with you know, all night coverage, I listen to it sometimes in the middle of the night if I can't sleep. It's like, oh, this stuff is just what we heard during the day, and that was already repetitive.
Well, but it is. There's not to do what you want. To be perfectly blunt, you need guys like you and me on the air.
Right.
Watching the news tape, watching what's going on the other day, and breaking news to you. I mean, from your desk and other stuff. They don't have that. I mean, they have the people that are hosts just go from one report to the other. There's here's where traffic's coming up, or this is coming up, or they'll say, big news in Chicago, or these three news. You'll listen for CBS News. I mean, I'm quoting verbatim, like from News Radio 78 or something. You know, we'll have, Listen to the CBS News at the top of the hour. They're just there to jump you from one thing to the next. They never actually report anything to you.
Right. Well, I've noticed, too, I thought it was my imagination at first, but even the CBS News feed on News Radio 78 has been cut at the hour from, I think, 5 minutes to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are they going to say of any value when it comes to national news coverage in 3 minutes?
Well, they have made determinations all along the line. I mean, if you listen to the nightly news, like Channel 9, it's all, I mean, not all, there's going to be one or two, but basically it's all going to be local Chicago stories that they figure people, and they must have studies on this. I'm not saying they're idiots, and they probably know way better than I do. You would hope, anyway. They think that the national news you've already gotten during the day via the internet, or you've got, you know, the Wall Street Journal zipping into your phone or something like that. They must have enough backup to say that that's not what anybody wants to hear at 10 o'clock, is the Channel 9 person regurgitating what went on during the day that everybody already knows. That obviously must be their thought, but I think that there's still an awful lot of people who don't get it any other place. But my question,
absolutely.
My question to you is, when did it become, like, you listen to, you know, CNBC, and it's, you know, financial news. But, I mean, what we try and talk about, I mean, you've been only doing it for a while, but I think you've picked up pretty quick. If it's a story, I want to tell the story. I don't, because there might be a listener or me or one of my clients that might be actually going to trade on this thing, so I want to get it right. I want them at least, I mean, there's no point in me having a political view on a, quote, story. I mean, obviously I have political views on just about everything, but I'll try and at least say that's, with the story itself, it's a story about IBM or someplace. I think half the people listening to the show might actually have IBM. So I'm not going to give a recommendation on IBM, but I want you to know all the information that I'm getting, that if I were to make a decision, I would make it. And that has to come to you straight. You don't need to politicize that or to leave out half of it because I want people to sell it or buy it. I mean, otherwise, that's not right. But I guess my question to you, John, when did it become, you know, Dr. J, one of my best buddies, is on CNBC, and, you know, he'll flat out tell you, this isn't news, it's entertainment. Once you get to 24 hours, it's rated. It's all ratings. It's how you put the news out there. If it bleeds, it leads. I mean, you want to have the good-looking guys, the good-looking women, that's what you want to have on there. You're going to get some dog or some big old fat gray-haired guy. You're not going to do that. I mean, unless the guy's famous or something. But, I mean, it comes down to that. It is entertainment. I mean, that's why all the women on there can all be models, right?
Sure.
Because,
well, they all look like they came from central casting somewhere.
Yeah. They're all size 2.
I'm just, you know, I couldn't tell you exactly when this happened, but I certainly, you know, trace it to a time, say, in the last 20 years or so where you did have access to other local affiliates' news programs. You know, people put clips up or they have links online or news aggregates feed you this stuff. And I began to realize just how repetitive the local news was across the country even. When it's supposed to be local stuff, you would see, you could tune into some of these stations and watch and you would see the same sequencing of right. news stories. And in some cases the same news copy being read, unattributed, you know, they had no sense of this came from one network or one think tank. It was being fed by some, you know, news group to people, and they were reading it exactly, you know, word for word as you'd hear in Houston or Sacramento or Bismarck, North Dakota, or whatever. And there was just this echo chamber to it that I began to think even the local news isn't local anymore. It may look to be local because you've got local people who don't have visibility nationwide, but listen to what they're saying. And I think it's, you know, when news should have become more, you know, global or, you know, had wider appeal, it became more, you know, stultifying and local and kind of, you know, the same stuff over and over again. I'd say sometime in the last 20 years, and online news coverage in some ways has made this happen faster. So it's an anomaly to me, really. You'd think that news would be varied and unpredictable, and you'd have a wide selection of stuff to go to, and you don't.
Well, I get the, as you can imagine, I get a bunch of stuff written to me by all the listeners, and the amount of the spin. I will say this, and this is absolutely the truth from what I get, my very small survey, is that the liberals have their kind of weirdo sources as well, but nothing spins like the stuff on the right. You could be some absolute loser in rightwing.com newsletter somewhere and put something in there like, you know, Hillary Clinton has hemorrhoids. And in 30 seconds, you're getting it from 15 different people. I mean, everybody is all over these sites that have zero, have absolutely none, you know, where they could say, you know, here's the doctor's report about Hillary's hemorrhoid. I mean, there's no basis to anything. And it spins so fast that there really is only, there's like one source and you get it from like five different people from all different places. You know, then all of a sudden you'll get it from Drudge, you'll get it from here, you get it from there. There's, I don't think there's much, and I'm not saying the left is any better, they're just not as fast.
Right.
You know, but I mean, you know, the interesting, Manny Weber will always say, people's access to news is better than it's ever been. And I said, well, Manny, if that's the truth, how come there's half as many reporters? There's half as many original reporters. So if garbage in, garbage out, right, as they used to say in college, right? I mean, if there's not a whole lot of full blown stories that people write that actually are original research, I mean, I don't know that the Tribune pays for that anymore. The best one I read last year, and I keep trying to find it. Well, I'll find it. I mean, it's not like I can't, but I'm not great at finding stuff. The Washington Post article was about I don't know if you remember this one. It was about 5 days long, and it was like a whole page every day where the guy charted essentially the Horseshoe of Despair. Did you
remember that? I remember that, yeah.
Where he started, I mean, all the way from Kentucky down through Alabama, across and up into Missouri and Arkansas about, you know, how many people are going on disability, how many people are going. That's why whenever these numbers come out and you get it, and it's not like I wouldn't do the same thing. If I was president, and even though the world's, is suckiest the word? The world's suckiest number is the unemployment rate. It is a useless number for virtually, you know.
Absolutely.
It has been for forever. So this guy essentially charted how many people in these areas, because places have left, the amount of long-term disability where people are landing in this last column. They're not unemployed, they're on long-term disability, but they're 40-some years old or 50. They've got back problems, they work in this plant, that plant, or nursing homes or whatever. Not like they don't. Gentlemen, I'm talking people like they're animals. They're not, they're people. They could have what you and I would consider a regular job, but he interviewed one lady, and she goes, all these people that are getting on this permanent disability, a lot of us worked in nursing homes where there were none of those machines that help you pull people out of bed, so you had to do it by yourself. And after 25 years of that, you know, you've got a bad back. I mean, there's no ifs, ways, or ands, or buts. And she says, I don't know of a person down here that's ever worked where they sat down all day like people doing regular jobs. So, yeah. So it, it, And she goes, if I could get a place where I sat down and did some stuff on a computer once I learned how to do it, she said, I could do that, but I can't do any of the jobs here. I'm there, man, I'm disabled for that. She goes, but if you gave me a job where, you know, I was, you know, like routing trucks or doing something like that from a chair, she said, I'd learn how to do it and I'd be good at it. She said, but there are no jobs like that down here. So, I mean, the real issues that I think you and I, even though sometimes politically we're in different, the real issues, people on both sides should be able to talk about, because the real issues are what's causing the people on both sides to be fighting. That we never seem to attack them. And it could be little stuff. I mean, you know, could you get, 200 of these people, I'm not saying there are or there aren't, off the, off that kind of a thing, or 500 off that kind of a thing, if you had a, I'm not talking about high speed, you know, tunnel like, you know, Ramfather was talking about with Tesla. If you extended a commuter line to Janesville, where the plant closed 10 years ago, you know, could those people then, commute to at least O'Hare, where the plant train goes by, or to Chicago, and, you know, and could, you know, 500 of these people be retrained for a job here? The answer might be yes, John, but we don't have any solutions like that I can see.
No.
Any little sort of, hey, look, you're on the right, I'm on the left. Let's forget about that. Let's go have a drink afterward and fight about it in some bar. But right now, let's solve this problem, right? I mean, I don't see anything. I mean, I'm sure some of it's happened somewhere, but it nowhere near like we should be as Americans. You know, the journey of a thousand miles starts at one step, right? I mean, and we don't seem to have any of that going on.
No, there's so few opportunities to, like, get in the middle of some news story that's evolving and that you watch grow and turn into something of national, international significance, because it's been carefully detailed and written in a way that's interesting enough for you to stick with it. I've been doing, you know, research for literary stuff, kind of from holdover from my academic days.
Are you writing a book?
And, you know, I read these old muckraker journals like McClure's and, you know, magazines were published the first 20 years of the 20th century. And they, you know, had no problem sending correspondents to far-flung places, giving them living expenses. These people would hold up for months in some other town and research the heck out of some issue. That's how you got, like, Ida Tarbell and the expose on Standard Oil. This ran for, yep, 6 months in McClure's magazine or something, maybe more, and then ended up as book-length exposés. But it came out of investigative journalism that was extremely choreographed, in-depth, fair. I think, you know, by our standards today, it's very fair. And sometimes there's only a couple people who were working on this stuff, but that's all they worked on. And it was exhaustive research and vetted and very well written and then very well edited and well distributed. So you had a public that was really informed about stuff that, you know, everybody, you know, had every right to be. And I look around today, and I don't see anything that passes for investigative journalism.
Well, do you think you get a
local newspaper, or even in any national newspaper?
Do you think
anymore?
You get a money?
It's not like they don't have money, but they're clearly all just struggling to survive.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
They'd like to do less of this stuff if they could. So where does that leave a reading public that is just as hungry as it ever was for interesting stuff?
Where do
no
you
matter
think,
what the
topic
is.
What do you think you think the money is here, right? I'm gonna, not just because it's good radio, I'm gonna push back. I'm gonna say, if John Flanagan walks into the editor of the Tribune and says, you want to do a 2 week Walter Jacobson article on the people of Lower Wacker and go down there and live with them for 2 weeks like he did, I'm gonna say, the guy says, I'm not giving you $5,000 for that, or whatever it would cost.
Oh yeah, the money is there, meaning that the money, I guess, could be there.
Yeah.
If there were a sense that this is what their mission was, and they'd find the money, instead of, you know, the happy stuff that they just seem to buy and reprint. I guess, you know, the advertising doesn't do enough for them anymore, and that used to be a huge source for these newspapers. Advertising isn't there for them anymore because it's coming online and from other aggregate sources. So they don't see it as something that's really their mission anymore.
But how is it, Janet? I mean, Audrey used to, and she's been in real estate for a long time. I wish she still Series 7 here at PTI as well, but mostly what she does is real estate now. But she used to spend, I'm going to say, even the South Suburbs, that she was 60-70% of her advertising was in the Tribune. And she said they dropped the size of the ad for like a house that she's putting for sale down so low, she goes, you can't even read it, especially if you're an older person. You get It is so small, it doesn't attract anybody. It became useless, and they stopped doing it. So, I mean, whose fault is that? Hers or the Tribune's? I mean,
right. Well, yeah, as newsprint, you know, costs continue to go up. They got fewer and fewer pages. Look at any daily paper, and look at the amount of print that's in it. And now, I mean, it's full of illustrations and full page advertisements for grocery chains or, you know, lobbyist groups or whatever. And the real stuff that people used to read a newspaper for, the classifieds, the obituaries, things like that, it's totally different. There just isn't enough space to give you any of that in any kind of quantity. So I really sympathize with Audrey. I can know exactly what she's saying.
Well, I mean, I went and I bought I was in Indiana, I bought the Saturday paper. It couldn't have been 10 pages long. Was it like a buck and a quarter? It was like over a dollar for like the Saturday Tribune. The thing couldn't have been, I mean, like I say, it could have been 10 pages long. I mean, what the hell? I mean, what did the newspaper used to be? 7 cents?
Oh, yeah. The Sunday paper, probably.
Yeah, Sunday paper got to be, what, 50 cents, and people were outraged. Now, what is it now? 2.50? 3?
I think it's $5.
Oh, it's $5. Wow, because I
the Sunday paper, it's prohibitive for a lot of people. I mean, given what's in it, I can see why people don't subscribe the way they used to, because the paper doesn't float their boat. Any paper, really.
Well, I know. SP Futures up 8.75. NASDAQ Futures up 29. We come back. We have talk a little bit about what went on over in Syria and get John's take on what the hell's going on over there. It's the only thing that's on the front page these days. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. but have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie's Mr. Jan Flanagan. She's A.V. Angelica Lysenko on the board. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 28. We're marching towards, I think we probably close at a record today. We will see. We get there and we keep pulling back, but I think today we might go over the top a little bit. We'll see. I don't see any real bad news on the horizon, but then again, how do you ever really know when there's bad news on the horizon? John, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the macroeconomics, about what's kind of what's happening. We're seeing this is not just me pulling out, you know, individual stuff, by anybody's admission right now, World Bank, everybody's saying so. We've got a world economics that's slowing down a little bit. Right now, nobody's predicting going less than zero, other than maybe me. But, in other words, a recession. But say, slowing from 2% to 1%. We got manufacturing slowing down here. It's been in every single number. You can't dispute it. Is it big slowdown or turn right back up? That's to be seen. But we also have the consumer that's, quote, still strong. And, now, what we don't, the people who are saying that are people who are, you know, they're, instead of being us on the podcast / radio, they're people that are on CNBC making $1 million a year. So their view of the world might be a little different than yours and mine, Jen. Just saying. Everybody looks good. It's like, you know, you walk by a crowded bar, everybody's doing good. You know, but it's always, as you and I know, it's always in the detail. We went to, actually, Dr. Jay and I, imagine that, the two of us having a little bit of a disagreement. We went to this little place for one of his birthdays years and years ago, Janice, back in 2008, roughly. There's this little place on the west side, nice place. I'm sitting at the end, and it turns out I end up BSing with the owner. Imagine me doing that, right? And I said, well, my buddy's here, says that everybody's going great because, you know, restaurants are full. And guess what he says to me? Is your buddy would know one way or the other. He says, if my business is down 15%, which is pretty catastrophic to me, it could be 3 or 4% people, which you'd never know. It could be 10% on an individual ticket. It could be, you know, that week nobody got an after-dinner drink or nobody got the second bottle of wine or something. So you would never know unless you walked by and it was, you know, if it was 80% down, there wasn't a soul in the place. You'd understand, but other than that, all you are is, you're just one observation, it's worth nothing, basically. You know, so right, John? I mean, if you don't know the details, people like to talk about it, not accusing Dr. J of doing it, I'm just saying, but people will do that, though. They'll give you this cursory view of the world that somehow or another sometimes isn't accurate, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you're kind of, your data is so carefully, you know, studied in your particular view of the world, you know, your cash flow or whatever. You don't have time to kind of put this into bigger, you know, hoppers to see what is happening elsewhere or how to read or even to see what's going on in other places. And, you know, the restaurant industry, to me, has always kind of defied what I thought was logic. I mean, good restaurants seem to do a good business even when the economy was tanking. you know, the high-flying ones, there was always enough people around who could, you know, pay what they were asking for stuff. And they didn't seem to suffer, and they stick around for a long time. But the average places, you know, struggle, or they're here today and gone tomorrow, with just the slightest fluctuation. I've always thought that it's really hard to get a good index in some businesses for what's really happening around you.
Well, that's right. And
two points.
Oh, hey, is that Lou?
Hey.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm on from Italy.
All right.
Yeah, you told me you wanted me in the first hour. I can come back second hour if you'd like.
The first hour was like 45 minutes ago.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Oh, you know what? They changed the time zone over here. They changed the time here.
Well, the good
news
is
about that.
The good news
is
we're
now off daylight savings time, but you guys don't go off until next week, right?
Right. So the good news is you're on with John Flanagan, who
good morning,
wanted
Luke.
To be on with you.
And, good morning, John. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Poor Kevin had a call in from the parking lot where he's going in to get a blood test to cover for you, Lou.
Well, that's okay. I'm sure. Oh man, I am really sorry. They switched time zones here on me. I just looked at it, just saw it unnoticed, and of course, I didn't notice it because my watch is digital too, and that just synced with the phone. So all my time references changed automatically without letting me know.
I think we're changing.
Sorry about
this,
that.
I think we're changing this Saturday. Here,
okay,
Davidson,
so we'll be back to 8 hours. Okay,
yeah.
Well, my apologies. I had my...
Well,
my,
the good news is I thought I was going to have to come over and bail you out of someplace. Now at least I don't have to do that.
No, so what I was going to say is the anecdote about the restaurants is classic Italy. I believe it was Berlusconi who said when during one of Italy's frequent economic crises, what crisis? The restaurants are all full. And the second point I was going to make is that the plural of anecdote is not data, and that's my new catchphrase
like
these
I
days.
I like that. Because we were trying to dig into some of what's going on economically, Lou, and I was digging through some of these numbers on consumer debt and so forth. And when people get on and they say, "Well, the consumer's doing fine, their attitudes are good, and so forth," and when MasterCard data comes out and the amount of credit card transactions are up, everybody's cheering and saying how confident the consumer is, but at some point, if you don't have any money behind it, the phenomenon here that I'm looking at is personal debt. The interesting part is in 2008, we were at 56,000, and after the recession, consumer debt actually went down to 52 in 2012. Now it went back up in 16 to 56, and now it's back at almost 61. So we're marching back up again after actually contracting, like you would expect people to do after the recession. It's almost at a point, Lou, we were talking about, Lou and John, the definition, if you go in and pay 31 grand for a car and you get a loan for 29.5, did you even really buy it? It is damn near a lease at that point, isn't it? I mean, it's not, I mean, what do you own? I mean, how do you, when we start marching this debt up, is it really almost consumption? I don't know. I mean, our definitions, we start off by bitching about the unemployment rate and how you talk a lot about people going on permanent disability, especially in some of these areas where plants have left and these people are in their 50s and there's no, shall we say, soft jobs around. So everybody goes on. You know, can I be a ditch digger? No, my back is hurting. I could do something else. I could route trucks for you or something, but there's none of those jobs available. We've got these people going on long-term disability, so does the unemployment rate even mean anything? And I think the answer is probably no, and yet people talk about it all the time. I guess what I'm saying, Lou, is we're starting to turn these statistics into a point where if you follow along behind them and actually dig through the numbers, they're giving you sometimes a very different view of what you think you're hearing. Sort of my point.
Well, I think that's been the case for some time. I mean, we know that the labor department statistics with respect to employment figures are so badly skewed that they're almost meaningless. And of course, from my employment law world, the thing that I find fascinating is that, you know, disability insurance has become the new unemployment compensation because it never runs out. And you know, are we, it seems like we are gradually, given the number of people who are either disabled or unable to work, are we gradually moving towards some kind of universal basic income? Because we have a substantial portion of the population that is either not educated well enough or unwilling to, you know, to do the work that that's out there, and simply is content to sit back and, you know, take a greatly reduced standard of living based on a disability payment or some kind of unemployment compensation.
Or just the whole area is devoid of a job. I mean, and our friend Kevin, obviously, I mean, and I honestly don't know the answers. I'm going to look to see you guys opine. I mean, Northwest Indiana, which would be what, Southwest Michigan, is benefiting somewhat dramatically, and so is, to a certain extent, the Joliet area, from a lot of the delivery, whatever you want to call it, trucking, you name it. You know, there's words for it that I'm struggling with this morning, but that stuff that came out of Chicago. Now, is it accretive, I guess, is my question, or is it Chicago losing it and they're picking up? Obviously, in those areas, I mean, Kevin is doing a lot of work in his education area for supply chain management and those kinds of things, and it's a very positive stuff for those areas. The question is, are we just losing people here in Chicago and moving them there because of, you know, political problems here, because of wage problems here, or is it a net gain? It's hard to really put your finger on it, isn't it? I mean, whether it is it's a net gain for this area, but is it a net gain totally? I don't know. I don't know that anybody cares to look.
I think you want to see people. I think you want to, what you're seeing is people who want to take advantage of the cultural elements of Chicago and other big cities that are very desirable, but who cannot afford what's going on downtown. They can't afford to live downtown, whatever. And this division is something that you and I have talked about for some time, and it's getting worse. Because again, the difference between what it takes to be a financial success and to make money in this economy, and what it takes not to, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we're getting a narrower and narrower group of, you know, knowledge workers, whatever, that are going to be able to satisfy the needs of this economy, while a larger and larger segment of the population simply can't tap into that. And I think that's another reason we're seeing the income inequality issues, and that's part of the reason you're seeing the mass demonstrations in places like Santiago and Beirut and London and a few other places.
Well, when you don't have universal growth across the board, from all my economic studies, and John, feel free to opine in. I think if you don't have growth of about 3%, maybe even a little more, I don't think everybody ever participates. I mean, I think that you get, I mean, even here, I mean, I'd like to see, I'm obviously, all of us went to school for like a real long time, so we're three people that can agree on education. And yet I see the amount of demonstrations and the almost the civil rights kind of demonstration fervor that's going on with this teacher strike here, and I can't deal with it. I mean, everybody knows that I work in the Chicago Public Schools. I mean, I think an awful lot of people there do a darn good job. But the idea that we're going to get, I don't know what they're even looking for, but we're going to get a 3% raise when our neighbors get none. I don't, somehow or another, that's not right to me. I mean, it's not, they're not talking about being auto assemblers looking to get a little bit bigger piece of the auto pie that you and I just bought, vis-a-vis the management making, you know, $5 million a year. He can make 4.5. We want 10 cents more an hour. That's a fight that in private industry I don't have a problem with. But the idea that, you know, thousands of people are running up and down the block trying to demand more money out of their neighbors that they know aren't doing all that well, I look at these numbers this morning, and we have in the last, since 2000 to 2019, consumer debt, which is not, does not include what, Joe, the governments are, what governments owe on your behalf. I'll say that exactly. So this is student loan, this is cars, and this is credit cards. I don't even know if it includes mortgages. I should know. I will, but, it's gone from 29,000 to 60,000, so it's doubled. Yet the median wage has gone up 10%. Those numbers, if I want to become a rural dude, that dog doesn't hunt over any long period of time. I don't see how it can. I mean, where am I wrong here? You guys tell me.
Well, just speaking from my own experience, I was pretty much employed since college all the time, and I thought I had a decent job, income, standard of living. I had disposable income, but I pretty quickly realized that there were certain places I would never live in Chicago, no matter what happened. And, neighborhoods that I lived in when they were perfectly nice all of a sudden became unaffordable to me. And I was still working, and I thought I was doing okay, but I knew I had to get out of Logan Square or Old Town or wherever I happened to be, because this was no longer a place I could justify spending those kind of, rents or whatever for. And I was a working person, so I kind of thought that this was, these people were obviously doing better at working than I was, because they had a lot more options and money to throw around. But what about the people who didn't have a job? And as you were saying earlier, Tom, the unemployment numbers don't tell anything anymore. The people who are not even skating by, the people who are completely done in by this, we don't really have good numbers on that. We don't understand the scope of it. We don't see how it's trickled down into so many strata of the so-called working population, too. And I just feel like we've lost control of what's really gone on, and we don't know, how to fix a problem that isn't even as bad as it may be, because we lack the research or the information or the trustworthy data to give a good size to it.
Well, there's I know there's three of us, so I don't want to talk too much, but to me there's like, how does this, Lou? There's like three levels of BS. One is, you walk in and your mother's on their deathbed and you're a trader and she says, how was your day? You're going to say okay, even if you lost some dough. You don't want to get into that conversation. It's not important, right? There's one level of BS. Another one is you drop one on your kids once in a while. Don't worry, we'll go on vacation twice next year, kind of thing. That part, people sort of get. Then the third level is when you start to believe your own BS. And are we starting to do that, both on radio, TV, both the left and the right, both the people out of Washington? Do they really think that everybody is coming along on this train? I mean, we've got a median income up $3,000 roughly in 19 years. Yet in the same 19 years, the cost of hospitalization has gone from $7,000 to $20,000. I mean, do we really think people are okay with this? I mean, or are we just saying it because it gets us elected on either side? And I would hope that we at least know what the story is.
I mean, I think what you're seeing, and I can't really speak for the electorate now, since I've been out of the country for the last 6 months, basically. But what I read is the same kind of thing that pushed the election button in 2016 for President Trump, and that is that there are just a ton of people really dissatisfied with what I would call the elite. These folks did not believe that the governing elites in Republican and Democratic circles cared two hoots about them. They were not responsive. And, what's happened with the election of Donald Trump, I think, has been for those people an eye-opener, because they can look about and say, all the stuff that I thought about in terms of how the elites operated and how they managed things, how they ran things. This guy, the president, has been pulling the scab off it, and that's why he's getting the kind of reaction that he's getting. And you can look at what every criticism that's leveled at him is coming from people who have, for the most part, engaged in the same kind of conduct. And that's what's being revealed. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's coming out of Ukraine. Jonathan Turley writes this fantastic opinion piece. I think it's for The Hill, and AJ can find it if she wants. But where he says, the most interesting thing about this Ukraine thing, and he says it in the context of the impeachment, the use of the president's word, or use of the word impeachment, or lynching, I'm sorry, with regard to impeachment. He said that revealed the hypocrisy of the elites that were criticizing the president, because the lynching term had been used since Bill Clinton's impeachment. He said, just watch what happens with this Ukraine thing, because what you're going to see is the president being criticized heavily for what happened in Ukraine, but the people who were doing the criticism were as heavily involved in it as he was. And so we're all just going to have to take a deep breath and be prepared for this to come out, because that's what's coming out. And I think as people see that, I think the dissatisfaction with their lives grows. They understand, like John just said, that they're not going to be able to tap into that line of income and lifestyle. And so you see these kinds of populist revolts. That, again, sitting over here, the TVs are full of what's happening in Santiago, what's happening in Beirut, what's happening
we see
in
none
London,
of that. We see none of that here.
What's
Luke.
Happening in Hong Kong.
We see none of that here.
So,
none of that.
Right. Yeah, I'm astounded at that.
Well, John and I, before you came on, that's what we talked about for 15 minutes. I'm going to have to go subscribe to The Economist again, because they at least tell you what's going on in all these places. You know, I talked to our buddy Eric last night, and the one thing that's slightly different from what, if you guys want to roll with me on this without getting away, there's a difference between the political thing that you're talking about, Lou, and the elites that I'm talking about. The elites on my side, the money side, are, and this is what I do as a money manager. I mean, obviously when I get off the show, I change hats and I'm managing money for people. And I'm trying to negotiate a market that wants to creep up to me for the foreseeable future. But I also know it looks like there's a cliff out there someplace, because one of these days these number lines are going to cross. So I have to be in a position to where I milk the upside as best I can, and yet be ready for when it turns, because I'm not going to know when it turns. There's an awful lot of talk about elites. The people on CNBC, they're absolutely convinced that they're going to get that memo. And I'm saying, I've been in the business 40 years, they're not going to get the memo. it's going to happen, and you're either going to be prepared the day before or you're not. But I'm saying the money elites, I mean, you're right. I mean, and you and I have talked about it, to where we're going to get in Ukraine and we're going to find out that the people who were running around stealing money over there, that basically is our money that we sent over there, and these creatures, I'll call them, that head over there and put their finger in the pie, like if it's so darn, like they're unabashed. You can't see their head, because all you see is their ass, because their nose is in the pie, right? I mean, they're on both sides of the aisle. They've been there forever. They're probably getting worse. And for every Manafort, there's a Biden's kid. But what I'm talking about is, and I talk about with Carl a lot, is the money elites is why do the top, you know, 1,000 people at Commonwealth Edison make X, and the people on the bottom of the chain make, you know, way less than X? But how is it that the people at Apple have somehow for a 20-year span managed to pay off politicians, which obviously you see Tim Cook doing when he goes over to China, pay off politicians to pay people 50 cents an hour to sell people a phone for $1,000, and they make zillions of dollars a year? That is an elitism that is way, way tougher now to me to deal with than the political elitism. And that's getting worse and worse as companies, as one buys, they keep buying them up more and more and more. I mean, but the idea that we've essentially offshored all our low paying jobs, we have people coming in from overseas that essentially, I use the term chattel, where you get a guy from China for $65,000 he's a PhD, works at your place, he can't go get another job even if they offer him 80, which shuts out the American guy from the 80,000 job because this guy can only be paid 65. Lou, this is unconscionable, happening below this political fight that we're all in. But that's where the elitism is. Why can't we pay an American $80,000 if that's what it's worth? Why do we got to employ somebody from China and only pay him 60 and he can't change jobs? Who would have thought of such a thing? You're an employment guy.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, the one of the most interesting things that you see in employment law and have seen since the dot-com boom was the dramatic expansion and explosion of what's called the H-1B visa
right.
program, which allows us to bring in engineers and other highly skilled people from places like India or Asia, where they are willing to come into this country and work for a, you know, 50% of what you would pay an engineering student here in the United States. And I have always had heartburn with that, and I've always looked at that program. And, you know, if you look at what the tech industry has been doing since the late 1990s, they have constantly pushed for those numbers to increase, for those H-1B visas to increase, rather than letting the market drive up compensation for people here in the United States, which, of course, would incentivize people to go into those fields so that we would start to get a leveling effect. I have had, you and I have talked about this, the most dangerous aspect of our government right now is its constant and continuous and intervention into the economy at all levels with incentive programs and disincentive programs that are literally designed to damage competition within our economic system here.
Well, they're all designed.
It's fascinating to watch.
They're all designed for the big companies to excel at the extent of other people.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it's designed to frustrate competition.
But it's not like when Roosevelt took the people under 16 out of the factories, it decreased the supply, so people had to pay more. That helped the guy at the bottom end. That's not what's happening now. I mean, we got 360,000. Yeah.
But it's the same kind. It's the same thought process.
Right.
I mean, you and I have talked about that. The Fair Labor Standards Act was enacted to promote inefficiency in wage payments in order to defeat the 25% unemployment rate that they were looking at in the mid-1930s. And actually, I think having read The Forgotten Man, I think it's worse. I mean, that was the thought process. But that was a broad, across-the-spectrum kind of application. What we're getting now are these targeted regulatory responses and solutions that damage specific businesses.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In favor of other large businesses.
Absolutely. All right, we got to go, guys. David's coming on. Thank you both. A little disjointed on who's on what where, but hope you enjoyed meeting each other. You guys are great together. It was fun, and we'll do it again soon.
A pleasure.
SP Futures up 8.
Thanks, Lou. Sorry, guys.
NASDAQ Futures up 29. Lou, get that watch fixed. Back with David Adelman in a couple minutes.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hausch. He's AV on the board. S&P futures up 875. NASDAQ futures up 3050. Dow up 90. It says here, recession nowhere near. Okay? I remember somebody said that. Just saying. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 43.3%. FTSE down 5. Call that flat. CAC around up 6. Call that flat. Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 67.3%. Shanghai up 25.8%. Hang Seng up 223.8%. Remember, we've got the Fed meeting this week. We've got some Apple earnings this week. We've got a lot of earnings this week, as we did last week. Bonds, interesting here. 1.83 we're up to. The Bund, minus 0.34. Japanese, minus 0.12. These are the highest we've seen these in weeks and weeks. On the Bund and the Japanese for, like, more than weeks. We've got oil down 15 cents. We'll call that flat. Same thing with Brent. Natural gas up 7 cents, 237. That's kind of marching up a little bit. It made it down to 223. Arbab, $1.66. Gold, we've got gold down 60 cents. Silver up a dime, 1803. Gold still up over 1504. AV, what do you got? Sports, traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It's 7:35 a.m. in Chicago, 46 degrees outside. We're expecting mix of clouds and sun. This morning, followed by mostly cloudy skies and a few showers this afternoon. There's a 30% chances of rain this afternoon. Also, we're expecting some steady rain overnight. The highest of the day will be 49 and the lowest 39. In Phoenix, it's 60 degrees currently, sunny day, clear skies. The highest of the day will be 74 and the lowest 47. In traffic, we don't have any accidents right now reported. Just a lot of constructions all over the city, especially on the 90. Both directions looks like it's pretty tied up. Also, Eisenhower looks pretty busy downtown. And that's what I got for traffic.
Not much.
Yeah, so
I turn back. Not today. Everybody keep coming. There's no accidents. Don't become one. We have David.
Yes, we do.
David, how are you?
I'm here.
What's up, man? Looks like
not much.
New records today. New records.
It looks like it.
Yeah.
You know, I being frank, I said between 30.09 and 30.15 was a sell in the S&P futures, and if you're wrong, you're wrong. And while we haven't, you know, really poked out the highs and made a new high close, it's there, and it probably will do it today, or at least that's the early indications.
We have the Fed meeting this week. We have markets at record levels. We've got unemployment at record lows, and we're going to cut rates and pour more money in the system. Is there something?
You've been on that train for a long, long time.
Do you think the manna from heaven would ever have stopped if there would have been 24-hour news that the big guy upstairs had to listen to?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm not a Fed guy. I'm not a policy guy. I don't really know that much about yield curves and the like. But I do think that there is a response to what you mentioned earlier, German rights and Japanese rights. I mean, they want to be more aligned, and, you know, they want to put the market in line with, you know, the 10-year, Fed funds rate in line with the 10-year. And so this, I will at least buy their words for a minute. I mean, their weekly money supply stuff, which you and probably one other person in the world follows anymore, you know, is a little bit different. But I do think that at this point I can buy the policy words of Powell saying that this is a mid-level adjustment to try and get things more in line with Germany and Japan and our own, you know, 10-year.
Okay, well, the 10-year's going up.
Right, and so we have to go down to be in line.
All right. Well, I get, I just...
And again, I'm not a policy guy. You know, I just want to try and see what time, where they get to what they believe is the current neutral rate, and then see what happens. I mean, my thought is if they are going to lower rates in this environment that you pointed out with, you know, lowest unemployment and, you know, this kind of thing and no, you know, no recession in sight for now, then maybe they should say, hey, this is it, boys and girls. We're doing this once, but that's it for the foreseeable future. We're now neutral and we're in line. I don't think they'll say that, but that would make a little bit more sense.
I would agree. But the whole idea, especially when you have somebody who absolutely loves to beat up on these people, and we assume the Chairman Powell at his 150 grand a year or whatever he makes is somehow, I don't know, even you would say is totally, shall we say, that he's so, you know, silver spined that he can stand in the wind against all this pressure. I don't think anybody can, David. And the idea, I mean, politicians from day one have wanted, A, for people to make money in the back room so they can spend it for people, right? We've got a $1 trillion deficit. By the way, why is the federal monthly statement that was due out September 12th still not out?
I have no idea.
Why are we hiding it? You go to the federal Treasury monthly statement, and they'll give you the August number, and they'll say next one due out September 12th, and as of like last Thursday, it's not out yet.
So I have no idea. I actually, because I do on my morning reports, my written reports and email reports, I cite the figures, and I do cited that one, and it was no estimate, and then it didn't come out. I did actually notice that.
Okay, so the Fed has basically told this guy, this president, and this Congress, and us, that we're putting in we're expanding the balance sheet $700 billion next year, right? 60 times 12, right?
Yeah.
So in order to do that, so we're essentially saying if you run a $1 trillion deficit again, and you go out and borrow money from people and sell bonds, we're going to buy, to the tune of $1 trillion, we're going to buy 3/4 of them for you. Which is essentially the same as saying President Trump, go in the back room, roll off 3/4 of $1 trillion in $100 bills and spend it. That is not the way that our stuff is designed. It's never been designed that way. The Fed is not in that. They are supposed to be managing the money supply appropriately. They're not supposed to be. Why, if we're going to do that, just let Trump do it. Don't have one person sell the bonds through Goldman Sachs and the other primary dealers, make a friggin' fortune, front run it. Then the next day the Fed goes out, pays commissions again, let these guys front run it and do it back the other way. Let's get off the two-step
process. And isn't it interesting on that vein of thought that Mnuchin is Treasury Secretary, was a high-level chief at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. I mean, why not just let the guys, let the printing press in the back room go? Because no population would ever give their politicians, even Caesar, that ability.
Even Caesar.
And yet, here, because it's a two-step process, it's okay. Isn't that what Powell just told this guy? We're going to keep asset prices up through next year, through your election, then it's on you, basically. Or he hasn't said it, it's on you. But, I mean, does anybody think that this is healthy? If you really understand.
Long term, no. Short term, you know, wealth effect for, you know, stockholders, yeah, probably. Maybe even for, you know, gold holders, because there's an inflationary aspect to it. But no, I get what you're saying. I mean, even the most bullish people, you know, the bullish economists, bullish analysts, or whatever, have repeatedly said this will not end well.
Well, I was on a couple weeks ago now with Joan Esposito, and she asked me to explain how that worked. David, they had to let me go because they, you know, they have limits on what I want to have people on. But so the board lit up. What's he talking about? Nobody knows the difference between the Treasury and the Fed. I say nobody. If you just went on regular sports show, if you went on The Score, say, and took out 5 minutes and started talking about this, the deaf ears on the other side. They're manipulating a system which nobody understands. I mean,
no, I get it.
And you know what? And to be honest with you, David, I think it really sucks. I mean, if we were to say, and yet nobody calls them out on it, because somehow or another, the Democrats are going to have to do the same thing, because they understand that if the interest rates go up 1%, and we're what, 2 years away from being $25 trillion in a hole, it's $250 billion a year, whatever increase in 1%. I mean, what kind of a, you know, whole, are we really talking about, you know, Trump and his campaign said, what's the problem? At some point, if it gets too big, you just pay people back 80 cents on the buck. Are we really going there? I mean, they're talking about another.
I don't know. We need to call Japan for a template.
Well, yeah, they just.
I mean,
yeah.
they've sat in the same position for 30 years.
Well, yeah. But their situation is people give them money, they give them less back, right? Well, that's what
right. They're
doing.
Right.
So, I mean,
and they own all the stocks until it blows up. I don't know when that'll be.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's starting to stagnate them a little bit. I mean, it has been for a while. They're not growing.
No.
So, I mean, I don't know where you get from that. But now the market, on the other hand, we've got this bifurcation where I think, you know, if you listen to people on CNBC, for at least another year, and I'm sort of agreeing with them, you're going to get this, don't worry about income not going up, asset prices are going to go up, wealth is going to go up, we can continue to push a combination of companies buying their own stock back and Fed money entering the system. I mean, literally every single day now, there's $3 billion that's splashing into the pool. And it doesn't surprise me that every afternoon there's buyers. I mean, that's what happens.
You know what? I've really come around to. I mean, I've mentioned, you know, corporate debt to equity ratios, you know, Investor's Business Daily is top 50, and how those debt to equity ratios have grown and grown and grown to where, you know, beyond a certain level, I don't allow it to trickle down to my focus list of stocks. So, and I mean, that's been prevalent for 4 years. But I always thought, you know, well, earnings are earnings. It's the mother's milk, and it's supportive. And then you look at bond yields, and the stock prices look attractive. And then, you know, I commented last week. I started just thinking, between the money supply and Fed injecting funds and all this other stuff, and Treasury, you know, pushing the Fed and the stock buybacks, where would this market really be without that? And I mean, I don't know what that answer is. It's, you know, a hypothetical, and, you know, there isn't an answer to it. But I got to believe it'd be at least 20% lower.
Well, I would hope so. Only 20.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that we could
I
deal
said
with.
At least.
Yeah, that we could deal with. But I hope it wouldn't be 50.
It could be.
That's a problem. That would be a big problem. Right. Because I think a lot of people's accounts, if they borrowed money at margin, that's a problem with 50. 20, I think most people
can look, even, you know, we don't have to go back to 2008 and 9. Let's look at the last quarter of 2018.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the worst December in 80-some years. It was the worst quarter in 11 years. The indexes were down, depending on which one you looked at, between 21 and 26%. And the average stock in the Russell was down 40%. So, you know, we don't have to go a long way back. And what was it? You know, it was liquidity. It was trade. It was this. It was that. It was, you know, fear that, you know, one rate hike by the Fed might lead to two or three. I mean, it didn't take much, and the average stock was down 30% in 4 months.
All it took, David, to be, and I hate to minimize this, but the more I look at it, the more all it would take, even right now, as good as this market looks, and it looks really good today, is for the phone call to go out from the Federal Reserve, and you're going to get Mnuchin's buddy at Goldman Sachs, instead of saying, buy me $3 billion worth of bonds yet again today, if you were to say, you know what, sell me two.
Sell me six.
Or even one or two. Sell me a half a billion. That would reverberate. These spoons would be down 30.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Instead of being up 10. I mean, it's just a relentlessness. And yet we have, I honestly never thought, David, that I would, in my lifetime, go through this inflation thing again. How do people realize, just because you can't get a raise, or maybe certainly in our industry we can't raise any prices, everything's going to zero. How do you not realize that in the last 10 years the price of anything elitist, a baseball team, a football team, is like doubled or tripled in 10 years?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, or the market continues to go up, or the price of some things, yet some property has gone kind of the other way. Manhattan real estate's going down, but it's individual stuff.
Highland Park, Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, in areas like that. I mean, Orland, the stuff's about the same as it was. I mean, I don't know if people made it. They haven't made it quite back to 2007. I'm going to say the house was 250 in 2007. They probably made it down to what, 155, 160, and I'm going to guess it's back to 235. I don't think it's 250, and it's definitely not over where people paid for it. Now, some areas, I think they've made it all the way back, and maybe up a little bit, I think, you know, but you'd have to be Audrey to tell you the individual areas, but New York made it all the way back at one point, didn't they?
I'm telling you, honest to God, not because my house isn't selling. There's two very exclusive areas of Highland Park, one called High Ridge, one called Architectural Point. You know, acre minimums and beautiful, amazing, updated, you know, homes and just gorgeous landscaping, gated communities, security. I mean, beyond phenomenal. 12-car garages. I mean, stuff like you've never seen. Indoor basketball courts. I mean, unbelievable. These houses started at $1.5 million, went to $12-15 million. Ask Michael Jordan what his home in Architectural Point is selling for. He's tried to sell it for 4 years, lowered the price $3-4 million with his indoor basketball court and 12-car garage, cannot sell it. Average home there in 2 years in either of those two areas is down 30%.
I'm going to ask a question. I don't really answer this, but I know what Audrey's opinion is, and which is probably the most learned one, is the young people today view that as a total albatross, want no part of it.
They don't. They want no part of it.
Yeah, they want no part of it. The idea
they look at that and say, hey, it's too big. We want one kid or two kids, and you know, if we have a quarter acre, you know, backyard, that's enough, and you know, we take them to sports anyway, so we don't need the landscaping or whatever, and this looks dated and that looks dated and the furniture looks old, and then, you know, we don't have a vision for that. They don't want 5,000 square feet, 6,000 square feet and a lot of land. They want 2,000 square feet. They want it all updated and beautiful and with dark, you know, floors and fireplaces. They want to bring their toothbrush and move in.
Right, exactly. They don't want to have to paint it. They don't get care less.
They don't want anything.
I mean, that's why they like Lincoln Park. And when I get home, I can walk to here, walk to there. I don't have to have 12-car. What do we need 12-car garage for? I don't want one car, let alone 12.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these properties that you couldn't get, they were all selling for over offer, are now, you can't give them away.
No.
My own included.
Right. You absolutely can't give away. And it's not, part of it's the economics, but part of it, I mean, I got to believe that if Michael Jordan's home went for, I will use the term, $5 million, it has to be 40% of replacement value. It can't be even half.
Oh no, my house was valued at 250 square feet, $250 a square foot, built and improved with $200,000 worth of improvements, $105 a square foot, and I can't get it.
Right. Yeah, some of it's changed, and yet now you'll see what you know one of the most amazing phenomenons that I didn't realize. One of my this place where once in a while I drive my attorney home, and right near his place there's this nice little bar. We stop in there once in a while, and I love the place, David, because the people at the bar are all either architects, they're lawyers, mostly architects, and you know me, I sit down and talk to somebody, and my brain's like a sieve. I just love to learn what other people know. And a couple of these architects, one of the guys says, you know, you're missing the whole point on this. I asked him, I said, well, how is it that these buildings downtown now, everybody wants them to be rental? 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, you rented a place until you could condo it. Why would you want to go back from a condo to rental? They bought everybody out of Lake Point Tower so they could go back to rental. He goes, you're missing the point. I go, I don't know the point. Please tell me. He goes, 15 years ago, before the crash of 2007 and 2008, he said, if somebody's kid, especially daughter, not being sexist, but especially daughter, is going to move downtown, no. I don't want you in the garden apartment in Bucktown. You know, I want you if you're going to move down there, I want you in a high rise with a security, with the health club in the facility, where you can park your car and not on the street and walk three blocks home at 2 a.m. I want you in that place. So the parents were buying those condos for these kids, essentially, or were giving them a down payment, right? And so,
right. And so
all of a sudden the thing falls apart. So the old man he buys some condo for $300. Now he's sucking on a thing at $170. They don't want to do that anymore. So now they've wised up and they've said, look, Susie, get yourself a place in one of these buildings. It's $2,200 a month. It ought to be $1,200, right, or $1,500, or maybe it's $3,000. It ought to be $2,000. You can't afford it. I'm going to give you the $1,000 a month for 2 years or 18 months. By that time, hopefully, you'll find a guy and move somewhere else, right? And the last thing I want to do is be puking this thing out $100,000 to the bottom. I don't want any part of that. I want you to live in a nice place, and I'll give you $1,000 a month. Please live here instead of someplace in, you know, on the frontier. And that's the phenomenon. You know what, David, I didn't realize that the 2008 fiasco had left such a bad taste in people's mouths in owning real estate.
And the new generation just has different. I mean, they it's different. You know, they're all going back to glass bottles because they don't want to put plastic in the dumpster. And I get it. I mean, I get it to a point, but they don't have a vision. There's no such thing as, oh, I want to be a land baron, and the more real estate I own, the better I am. They don't think that way.
Well, they also think if they're working for Google in Chicago, then in 2 years they might be in California. Why do they want to? I mean, look what happened to the people who owned places in 2007, 2008. People were turning down spectacular jobs elsewhere because they couldn't take the $80,000 hit on their house.
No, I get it.
And I want, you know, now you're like, I want to move to where's Google? Where are they? I don't even know where they're. Where's their big headquarters? They in by
Stanford? They're in California.
All right, so you know, if I get a big offer to the main place, hey, I'm walking down to the rental guy. Say I'm out of here on Tuesday. Sublet it. I want to go.
Right. No,
you know?
I get it.
And I don't blame them. Be honest with you. I mean, I was like that when I was younger. I mean, I rented a long period of time, and if I got a job somewhere, I could go. But then again, I couldn't play softball everywhere else, so I had to stay. All right, so do we sell anywhere here, David? Is this going to fail, or are we going to go through this time?
Now you have to sell it on the way down. You can't, you know, you stood in the train tracks, and here or there you got a 2% correction. I always said if you got that, you had to grab it, or the market would take it away from you. Now you have to sell it, you know, below 3,000, because if it keeps staying above, and you break out above on closing basis above 30.35, you're going to 32.80.
What have we missed in these, all of a sudden, these banks like the Morgan Stanleys of the world? You couldn't give them away 8 weeks ago, and all of a sudden everybody has to have them. What's changed?
They're cheap. I mean, you know, I think XLF at 26, 26 and a half, we were I mean, I think even you came along for the ride that, you know, sooner or later the yield curve would go out and, you know, price at 8-9, you know, times earnings, and some like Citi at, you know, book value or below were buys. And, you know, they've just come to get to probably fair value.
All right, bud, we'll talk at you Thursday. I hope you didn't saddle yourself with the Bears or the Irish. God, pretty brutal. We'll talk to you on Thursday. SP futures up 13.25. NASDAQ futures up 41. Looks like record day today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.